Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, on this week's New Statesman podcast, we have a slight sound issue. We are recording this on our phones in the podcast bunker. But Sonu, it's been has it been an eventful week in the Brexit process?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually, because it's become sort of fashionable to... It used to be fashionable to say this week will change Britain's future. And then it was fashionable to say, as ever, nothing's changed. Whereas I think this week is a little bit of both. So it's the first time that Parliament has expressed a majority for a Brexit bill. Is that right?
Other than Article 5,
other than actually triggering the process.
Yeah.
So I think that suggests that something's changed. That's new. That hasn't happened before. But in terms of knowing sort of when that's going to happen and what shape it's going to take and whether there's going to have to be an election to actually sort of break the gridlock, we still don't know yet. So in that sense, nothing's changed.
Yeah, no, I think I completely agree, right, in this week, for the benefit of any listeners lucky enough to be living under a stone, the House of Parliament passed at second reading Boris Johnson's Brexit deal, which basically is the bit where you get to go, I'm broadly into the thrust of this.
Yeah.
It declined his programme motion, which is the timetable to approve it. Boris Johnson is seeking an extension. We don't know if the extension request will be honoured, although I think the underlying assumption is that in practice, as long as one EU nation wants an extension, there will be an extension. Although, you know, maybe like that is going to be the final hilarious capstone on Macron's pro-European reforms in his first term, blocking the accession talks of North Macedonia and kicking out one country early or arguably at all and ending the spits and candidate system. But I think, yeah, the underlying assumption among most EU diplomats and most people at Westminster is that there will be a long or at least 3 month extension. In which the open question is, can Brexit be resolved by this Parliament? Well, this stage of Brexit be resolved by this Parliament? Because it kind of feels to me that the thing was slightly surprising, given that second reading was a free hit, right? In that you could basically go, I want Brexit to happen and then stop it in its tracks.
Yeah.
I was assuming more than 19 Labour MPs would vote for it at second reading.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big opportunity because you could basically go back to your constituents and say, look, I didn't block Brexit, but you could also be basically voting against what Boris Johnson wants to do and voting with what your party wants to do a seconds later. So it was a good opportunity for those kind of MPs to express that. And it was a really slim number of them who did.
Yeah.
So you expect it's going to be an absolute nightmare for Boris Johnson to get this Parliament to pass that bill without amending it to smithereens.
Yeah, because essentially, right, so I think the other thing which is really fascinating to me is, so I think we all knew that in practice that if the option of you can have all the regulatory divergence you want in Scotland, England and Wales, and all you have to do is create a customs and regulatory zone for Northern Ireland, then there would be a large majority in the Tory party for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of expecting that at least one of them would be kind of like, actually, no, I care more about the union, or, you know, particularly seeing as there are still people who are saying, well, my first preference is no deal, but I'll choose this deal over no deal. Almost everyone thought, well, one of these people who's privately saying this will vote against the deal.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because essentially it turned, we all kind of thought then, okay, we know that there are about 24, so 5 abstentions as well as the 19 positive votes at second referendum in the Labour Party. But we think there are probably about 10 people who haven't told any journalists who are like somewhere floating in the dark matter of the PLP.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out actually there is no dark matter in the PLP. that is the number that will vote for Brexit. We kind of assumed, okay, right, so there are loads of people who will tell us they care about the union between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and at least one of them will put their money where their mouth is in the chamber. And it turned out that none of them would.
Yeah.
But this is just the exit terms, right? This is just the agreement to leave. The difficulty is then there are no Brexits. And yeah, kind of people keep talking about like, oh, you know, people are voting for a harder Brexit or a softer Brexit. Well, no, they're voting for a Brexit with a wider potential array of hard, you know, like there are more possible hard end states to this Brexit than there are. But you could, in theory, still end up in the EEA and in a customs union after this Brexit if you wanted to, right? So, yeah, this is solely about the terms of exit. Now, for understandable reasons, for reasons that I think are at least tactically arguable, the government is kind of trying to pass both at the same time by codifying elements of the non-binding political declaration into the withdrawal agreement bill. However, one option they do have is to pass a clean, here are the terms of exit bill without any like jiggery-pokery about the future relationship and to try and pass a slimmed down, we are leaving bill.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, one reason why some people in Downing Street don't want to do that is they quite like the idea of having to fight an election on these wreckers are blocking Brexit. And even though I'm not convinced that the end point, so you like listen to the adult radio, you listen to the Today programme. How did you feel it played for the government on Today?
I always feel that it plays better for the government on Today than when I watch it on sort of news snippets or listen to news snippets on less sort of news heavy radio stations. And I think you were tweeting something similar, actually.
Yeah.
No, I think that that's right. I mean, there's far more credence given to the idea that, you know, Parliament is blocking it, that lots of them are doing it for the reason that they don't want Brexit altogether, rather than the fact that they want to try and shape the future partnership. They often, you know, well, I mean, this shouldn't turn into sort of BBC bashing, but I think ministers are often allowed on unchallenged to make those kind of statements. And it's almost like they're giving election campaign slogans rather than actually talking about what's happening in Parliament. That's how I always feel when I listen to the Today programme. And we were talking about this in the live podcast, I think, but I feel like that phantom election thing is very much the overriding message of lots of the commentary and of lots of the interviews on sort of that. But that's just one heavily political show.
Yeah, because what I thought was interesting is because, you know, so I start the day by listening to Radio 3, and then on a heavy news day, I will switch over to Classic FM because Classic FM is owned by Global, who are the kind of other big player in British radio. And as with Radio 3's music channels, where it's cascaded so broadly, the message is the same on all of the music channels on the BBC. Yeah, the message on Global, on Classic FM, is the message on Heart, is the message on, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. And the thing I found really striking, having listened first to the Radio 3 one naturally and then thinking, it's still too early in the day for me to deal with music with voices in it, let's see what's going on Classic FM, is the framing of it is so bad because it's basically MPs have voted for Brexit. However, they have not agreed to do it on the timetable demanded by Boris Johnson. So Boris Johnson has pulled the Brexit bill and Downing Street is saying there might be an election further delaying Brexit.
Which is what's happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's, one of those things
it's funny to hear the news being what's actually...
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it's just kind of like, I don't think there's anything particularly unfair about that framing. Mm. But, okay, she had bigger problems throughout the course of the campaign. But right from the off, one of the things that hurt Theresa May was the perception that she was a straight man, getting on with the job, etc., etc., was damaged by the very fact of her going, here's an election that I don't need to call.
Yeah.
Now, I think there are a couple of reasons why it might not work out the same way for Boris Johnson, even though I think they are kind of failing to stick the landing in terms of the argument that this is an election and they need to call, as opposed to an election in which they're going, if one comma in this bill moves, we will pull it. Is one, no one, even people who like Boris Johnson, and because Jeremy Corbyn is so unpopular in the polls now, I think it's easy for people to forget that although Boris Johnson has a huge lead, he is significantly more unpopular than most politicians at the absolute pit of their unpopularity. But even the people who like him don't think, I like Boris Johnson because he's a straight bat who doesn't do political things.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as harmful. But I also think, I guess my kind of, the thing I know I don't know is I think they've done quite a good job in Downing Street of managing the media and seeding the idea that this election is needed, and they haven't like deliberately kind of sidled into it.
Yeah.
Which means that even if the actual circumstances of the election are very obviously manufactured, I kind of think it's, that Linton Crosby phrase about you can't fat the pig on market day, The flip side of it is if you have fattened it beforehand and on market day you forget to feed it, well, your pig is less appealing than it would be, but you've still probably done most of the hard work anyway.
Yeah, they've put in the hard yards of the campaigning already, and I agree with what you say about managing the media. In fact, that's something, I mean, this won't have trickled down to your ordinary voter, but it is something that people are finding quite unsettling. There's been a lot of pieces, the best one of which was by Jill Rutter, who was at the Institute for Government, and she used to manage press at the Treasury, and now she's at UK in a Changing Europe, I think.
Yeah.
And she wrote a piece about these sort of anonymous briefings from Downing Street sources. And Nick Cohen and Peter Oborne have written columns about this process too, whereby journalists quote people anonymously so they can't really be held to account. And the problem, I mean, that's always been that's been the case in modern politics for a while. But the problem with it with stories like these is that they're basically contradicting what the government is saying on the record or Boris Johnson is saying in the House of Commons. And that's sort of doing quite a lot to, well, discombobulate certain people in the media at the moment. They don't understand sort of what is the actual truth. And it can lead to a lot of reporting that's basically sounds a bit more like propaganda than what the actual story is, because you're quoting these anonymous people and basing your stories on what really is just pre-election spin.
I thought Jill's piece, you're exactly right, was really good. And I thought her remedy for it, which was broadcasters shouldn't quote anonymous sources. They should just name the spokesperson and only take named quotes on air, I think is a good approach, because I'm afraid I'm simply not sold on the idea that, like, so there are loads and loads of reasons why we use anonymous sources.
Mm.
And I'm just not sold that any of those apply to a quote on a news bulletin on the 6 or the 10, or an appearance by the BBC's Pollard on the Today programme, or an appearance by ITV's political editor on Good Morning Britain, or similar.
I totally agree with that.
I simply just don't, like, the reason why, you know, I use anonymous quotes is, A, to protect those sources from reprisal, and B, in order to be able to break stories about the inner life of those political parties. And the reason why other people who do investigative journalism do it is, of course, to protect. However, like, literally none of those are functions that we expect from our public service broadcaster.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm just kind of unconvinced. I just thought that Jill's argument for what we should do instead was, I thought, pretty strong. I think also, yeah, it avoids this, like, well, this slight problem that ultimately, then if you have taken at face value what a Downing Street source has said, you at every stage have been wrong about this process.
Yeah,
right?
Like, that's the thing. You're basically, I mean, if you're doing it in good faith, you're basically being led up the garden path by someone who's lying to you. But if, as I assume lots of these journalists are, if you're very clever and you know exactly what's going on, then why are you parroting some of these stories that actually have no basis in fact? So, you know, certain things that can actually frame this Brexit process for voters. For example, the idea that there was some foreign collusion behind the Benn Act, for example, that was a completely baseless story as far as we can tell. And that was sort of framed by Downing Street sources to certain journalists. So I do think it's having a real life impact. I don't think it's I don't think it will be the sort of undoing of whoever goes up against Boris Johnson in an election. But I think it's more of a problem at this time than it has been before.
Yeah, I guess this is where my inner Osborneite comes out. My sort of concern about it is, yeah, I think actually the things which are electorally significant about the ways that the broadcasters are sort of effectively spun are sort of equal opportunities, right? So someone who worked for the Labour Party during the 2015 election said what they thought the most important broadcasting bias is that there is a particular bias towards whoever someone making a proposition.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, like, political party A, like, claims that, you know, Anoosheh Kellyanne is, like, tall and blonde, it's just like, you know, Anoosheh Kellyanne is tall and blonde, the Stephen Bush party has stated. A spokesman from Anoosheh Kellyanne has denied the claim. And you kind of hear it and you're like, yeah, but you would deny the claim, wouldn't you? You're the opposition. And
yeah,
there's something
exactly,
about
yeah.
the very mode of broadcast that is kind of has a propositional bias. And that, I think, did advantage Labour in 2017. I think it did advantage the Conservatives in 2015 because you had the kind of propositional bias of the SNP are coming to eat your house, say the Conservatives. Labour have said that they will not let the SNP eat your house. Well, they would say that. And in 2017, you had Labour will do a nice thing. The Tories say the nice thing is unaffordable.
Yeah, yeah.
And people shouldn't eat their gruel. And you're like, well, yeah, you would say that. I think this one is just more problematic because I basically think one of the structural problems with Brexit is, could we honestly say that people have been left as informed about the impact of Brexit as they are on, say, the budget, right? Where people broadly watch the budget coverage and they might go, austerity is great, austerity is bad. But I think they at least could accurately, when you were like, are you a winner or a loser from this budget? And I feel like there's been a failure to analyse the policy in that way. And also, right, ultimately, like, I just think that, and this is, I think it's the problem on the Labour side as well, that a source quote, by definition, should not overlap with a spokesman quote.
Yeah.
Because the source quote, if it's not something that the official spokesman does not want to be heard, it's not a useful source quote.
Exactly. It doesn't tell you anything about what's going on behind closed doors.
If a source quote is a message, then Downing Street wants out, or the Labour Party wants out, it is a spokesperson. Like, that to me is how it works.
I mean, I recently did a story about something that a council had done, and I had a source in the council who was telling me what was going on, and I also had a spokesperson for the council who was giving their rebuttal to my story.
Yeah.
Those are two completely different functions. Both of them are, I think, important to the story to make sure it's well-rounded, but they have completely different functions, and I don't understand why, because that's the case in every form of journalism apart from this particular strand. And, you know, having certain advisors that use it or exploit it can really make it quite a chaotic media machine.
We saw that with the extension letter, right, where it was just like, Downing Street sources says Boris Johnson has sent three letters, one unsigned.
Just
covering this in this way, the only thing this is doing is leading with the government's pre-buttle, as it were, of what's happened before the event.
Pre-buttle is a good
word.
Like,
it's just one of those things where it's just like I'm not saying I actually think there are equal and opposite problems if the BBC in particular, with its kind of hegemonic, grasp on our media landscape, right, is the primary news source for 60% of the country,
mm-hmm.
even before you factor in, its app, its website,
push notifications.
There is a huge problem if you instead have a BBC push notification going, defeat for Boris Johnson as he sends letter.
Yeah.
However, the fact that the first push notification I got from the BBC News app was Boris Johnson's three-letter ruse. It's just like, this is not necessary. There's a private media market for this.
Mm.
Like, and this is where my kind of Osborne belief that they are too imperial, kind of comes out in full sort of hue.
Mm.
I just don't think there is a case to be made for an organisation that we are compelled to fund for it to provide things that the market will not provide to assist in the kind of news, ever-speeding, creation of new bits of slogans and jargon so that people cannot follow the Brexit process. The, like, what does this mean for the strategy and what does this mean for the election? Like, if there's an argument for something we are compelled to fund in this way to survive in the 21st century, and it does not do these things.
Mm.
And if it does these things, then its blog should stop taking away eyeballs from my blog. It's, I'm afraid, essentially, like, maybe that's incredibly mercenary, but I just kind of think, like, if you want to behave like a market actor, then be subject to market mechanisms, rather than this situation in which people cannot really vote with their feet, is my incredibly right-wing view.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The big question that, we kind of ummed and ahed this week about when to do the podcast, because we knew that we might think is,
because we'd lost the equipment.
Yeah, there were loads of reasons why we didn't do
it. Don't try and pretend it's about the...
Well, I mean, so a couple of hours ago, we were thinking about not doing it today. And then we decided to do it today. Then we had to search for the equipment. But, you know, we one of the reasons that contributed.
Yeah, it did contribute. Yeah,
it was a contribute. It was, yeah, so that was my three-letter spin.
Yeah, yeah. there were many factors.
Is, you know, is there going to be an election? And I guess, yeah, we just don't really...
Well, we sort of disagreed about this, didn't we, when we did our live podcast a few weeks ago, because someone was asking, oh, is it definitely going to be in December or November? And Patrick and I were sort of discussing about the likelihood that it could possibly be next year, actually. And I still kind of think that that is a high likelihood. I know it's not really what people have been suggesting this morning, but I think Labour have now broken that taboo of the opposition party has to support an election. It has to back the opportunity to oust the sitting government. That was always the received wisdom, and now they've broken that. Do you see what I mean? They've broken that barrier, and so it's easier now for them to do that again. I don't know what justification that they'd give, because if they're going to secure an extension, that was the original reasoning. But as we mentioned earlier, they are doing so badly in the polls. And I do think that Downing Street's media management has been successful so far. An election, I don't think, is a very attractive prospect to the Labour Party right now. And I can see the opportunity that they have to keep delaying it.
But equally, I kind of think those two things are linked, right? So yeah, they've broken the taboo in that they've done it in Westminster. But the decision not to go for an election, you know, with a notwithstanding motion saying the election will be on day X after the Benn Act passed, I think has been an unmitigated disaster for, well, the principal author of it was actually the broader Remain movement.
Yeah.
And the Labour leadership, which had doubts about it, felt that they had to do it because otherwise they'd be aggravating their already not inconsiderable electoral problems with organised Remain, as it were. But ultimately, it created the space for, as we repeatedly said you could do, for Boris Johnson to get a deal by moving the Irish border into the sea, which, you know, has passed in principle twice, right?
Yeah.
MPs would have voted in principle for it with Letwin, and they arguably did because of the way the government opted to do it, and they voted in principle for it at second reading. Only the fact that the government went for this sort of kind of we want our fight or we're taking our ball away thing with the programme motion means that we are not now talking about a situation in which we're not saying, is Brexit going to happen? Yeah, happen. We'd be saying, well, the only question is we're out, and then the fight about the future relationship. So it's been a disaster for Remainers. It's been a disaster for Labour because it meant that they've ceded their position in which the political debate was no deal, yes, no, a question which unifies the Labour Party and is comfortable for them to answer, to Brexit, yes, no, a question which divides the Labour Party and is uncomfortable to answer.
Yeah.
And it creates a media environment in which I think it is completely fair enough for the broadcasters to cover the government as if they are more important than the opposition. I mean, they are the government.
Yeah.
However, we have had this situation since September in which, I'm sorry, Boris Johnson's views about the size of the state are barely more newsworthy than Joe Swinson's feelings about the future of liberalism. Have they received anything like equal coverage? No, of course not, because that's not how the government is covered outside of election time.
Yeah.
And I just think that, yeah, an unmitigated disaster for the opposition, that it has allowed itself in a position where it is fighting an election campaign where election time rules do not apply. So I kind of think that one reason why it might happen earlier than January is I think there's definitely a realisation among some organised Remainers that they had a near-death experience this week and that they should quite probably find a way to not repeat that.
Yeah. But
because if you extend without an election, you're extending to have a referendum. Now, maybe that's not what you're officially saying, but that de facto is the decision you are putting in front of MPs who don't want a referendum. And that increases the chances that this deal gets ratified by this parliament. If you extend in order to have an election, but you don't have the election yet, you enter this period in which the government, you know, can use all of the powers of incumbency. You have none of the countervailing pressures of election time broadcasting rules, which are, you know, well, the Labour leadership thinks are incredibly important to them. The Liberal Democrats think are incredibly important to them. The short-term evidence from 2017 is they're both right. The long-term evidence is that is less clear for the Labour Party, but it is more clear for the Liberal Democrats. Yeah, so I kind of think that the sort of flip side of that, though, is, of course, the other sort of act of folly is it moved the point in which you could fight an election in a time where, yeah, October is an unusual time for election, but it's not actively difficult, to this kind of debilitating election in the run-up to Christmas. It's dark, it's cold, particularly acute in Scotland, which is going to be a key electoral battleground in the next contest. And so I kind of wonder if maybe what will happen is the government and the opposition will find some kind of excuse, like some way of being like, we'll agree a new programme motion, and this programme motion will conveniently allow the government to go, oh, Parliament's blocked us, but we're going to try and pass it. Oh dear, the fact that we can't get our preferred end state through means that we've collapsed in late December, so we have an election in February after. And that feels to me that might be what ends up happening, is the kind of like, effectively, a managed long-term dissolution of this Parliament.
Well, that's why I think that's probably most likely to happen. And I'm not saying that Labour's decision wasn't disastrous, and I can see why, you know, it has been bad for them and the sort of capital R Remainers as well. But that doesn't necessarily, and this probably makes me sound like I don't have that much trust in the Labour Party to make good decisions, but I think that's all the more reason why they think they could probably leave Boris Johnson hanging on until a more convenient time for them to have an election, because they've already made that decision.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the thing is that,
you know, they're over the hump. You know, it's not going to get any better for them. And also, you know, if there was going to be an election, that's because an extension has happened. So they'll still be going into the election with the same argument as they would have been in October. The election is still probably going to favour the Lib Dems because their argument is so clear. They want to revoke Article 50. And Boris Johnson's message presumably will be quite clear as well. Oh, you know, this Parliament won't let me pass my Brexit deal. Vote for me again and we'll be able to get Brexit done, you know, as they keep saying. So I can kind of see from Labour's perspective, if the Lib Dems and the Conservatives want an election, it's an election probably this current Labour Party doesn't want.
Yeah, and I also think your point about if someone makes a bad decision, betting that they will continue to make more bad decisions is never a foolish way of betting. So I was at an event for, you know, organised pro-Europeans and a kind of briefing about, you know, where they go next. This is before the vote came back. And people in its leadership are still talking about the idea that you could have a referendum in this Parliament. Oh, and it's just like, it's just one of those things where it's like, guys, like, I would say quit while you're ahead, but the quit while you're ahead moment has passed. Quit while you are, like, behind, but not vanishing out of contention. Rather, I mean, this Parliament will never have a majority for a second referendum. No. And I do not understand why people have allowed themselves to believe that it would, right? The revealed preference of the Tory party is that their unity comes well. Also, I don't know why I'm saying, like, shock and awe, as political party has decided its cohesion is an important factor to its ability to, you know, change the country in the way that it wishes.
No? Yeah.
Tory party is not going to do it. They control the executive, so they will defund and therefore prevent, even if you could conjure up a majority for it on the floor of the House, which you couldn't. I mean, 19 Labour MPs just voted to do this Brexit. It's one of those things where it's just like, the only route is to try and roll the dice with an election. Now, yes, the polls for Labour are very bad. It's far from clear that there will be enough tactical voting to limit the Tories and prevent them getting a majority.
Yeah.
The Lib Dems may fall short, etc. However, the crucial thing about all of those bad things is I prefaced them with the word may, whereas eventually this Parliament will vote to leave the EU.
Yeah.
Like, it's just lunacy. But you're right, then, you know, once someone has, like, you know, the first lunatic decision is the hardest, right? Not least because, yeah, I was talking about this with someone else from another publication, and they were saying, well, the difficulty is, it's how do you do your analysis when you're like, well, this is why I said this was a bad idea in September.
Yeah.
And my advice to you is to invent a time machine. And the answer is you can't.
Yeah.
So I think you've kind of convinced me that maybe that does mean that we will somehow end up in a ludicrous situation in which, having had this near-death experience, we once again, like, move to a situation of going, like, maybe we can have
like the thrill of the near-death experience.
Yeah. Let's do that again.
Let's do that again. I also do think, going back to what we were saying about December being an odd time for elections, it is off-putting enough to enough people on all sides that there might just be, like you said, the sort of, oh, well, let's come up with a way where we don't have to do it at this time of year. For many reasons, December is just a very odd time to have an election, but there's so many reasons why it's, you know, worrying about Christmas, for example. Like, some people just want to be off for Christmas and have a rest, but other people worry most about money before Christmas. That's a big chunk of your voters there.
Yeah, I think this thing is just like, I mean, because one of the slightly surreal things about basically, I mean, all of politics, but particularly, like, is essentially because you kind of keep coming back to, well, if you're a major political party, it was in your interest to pass the withdrawal agreement in March. And every sort of analysis kind of comes back from this point where, like, well, you haven't done that, so It's quite difficult for me to see what you... And ditto, it's obviously difficult for any political party to fight an election in December. It's difficult if you're the Labour Party, which depends on its mass membership and on turning out fairly unlikely voters.
Yeah.
It's difficult if you're the Conservatives because you are the governing party. It is traditionally a time where, as you say, people start to worry about money. Not something people... Yeah, not something which necessarily lends it towards voting for the incumbent government. It's a time when... You know, what's happened with the pound and what that's done to the cost of exports. Again, these things all become more acute. And although, yeah, I kind of think one of the weird sort of double delusions that people draw comfort from is a lot of Remainers go, well, the economy will get worse, people will become more anti-Brexit.
Yeah.
Well, there's no certainty of that. However, I then think people in the government kind of go like, oh, well, people haven't gone off Brexit, therefore they haven't gone off us. Well, if you look at all of those Leave voters, yeah, that third of Leave voters who voted for Labour, that non-trivial chunk of Leave voters who voted for the Liberal Democrats,
yeah,
what do they have in common? They were in groups who were particularly acutely opposed to the negative effects of the pound's value falling. So even though those people are still like, Brexit, I love it, they were like, do you know what, I dislike the incumbent government and how it's managing my economy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, although we have, you know, this kind of terrifyingly unseasonably warm weather, it's possible that we may have unseasonably cold weather by the time we get to December. And then, of course, if the NHS struggles in cold weather, NHS increases in salience, trust in the Tories' handling of the NHS falls down. There are just so many, yeah, there are so many reasons to, like, find a way that they can have this row in 2020.
Yeah.
I'm just not certain that that way will be found.
Yeah.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.